Hello, and welcome to the Modern Maker Podcast for Thursday, August 8th, 2019. Now, before I tell you what national holiday it is, remember last week we had the theory that maybe the guy was like trying to scramble to come up with his holidays last minute because it was so bad? I have a new theory. I think the guy's on vacation and somebody's filling in for him and he's not doing a good job because the only choice for today is sneak some zucchini onto your neighbor's porch day.
What?
Yeah. I think this guy's just purely pulling from personal experiences for his days now.
And do what with it?
I don't know. Just make them think it's a snake, maybe? Actually, weren't there... Do you guys remember there used to be videos where people would put, like, a zucchini or something next to their cat?
Cucumber.
And their cat would... Oh, is that what it is? A cucumber?
Get your internet cat video memes straight, Chris, first of all.
I got the wrong vegetable. Yeah. Right animal, wrong vegetable.
We had zucchinis in our garden growing up, and if you don't pick them right at the right time, they get freaking enormous.
Oh, yeah?
Like the size of a small child. I guess they're just like all water. Right.
But are they still tasty? Like, do they still taste the same?
They end up becoming a lot more seedy and kind of hollow inside and like stringy, and then the rind gets thicker and thicker and more tough. So they're kind of better when they're, you know, more of a medium size than this sort of monster one. So that was kind of like the joke that you would give them to the neighbors. Could be like, hey, we got this from our garden. It's totally worthless, but it's huge. And here you go. Make some zucchini bread.
New theory. Ben is the one filling in, making up these holidays.
Exactly.
Right. There we go.
Now we got down to the
Yes. And I'm currently on vacation.
Yeah. What are you doing in, where are you?
I'm in Cincinnati, Ohio. So it was really short notice, but... You heard of the company P&G? They're like a massive company. I think they're like the largest consumer
Procter
brands.
And Gamble?
Yeah, which sounds like a duo like Police Academy, right?
On Procter or Morning Drive Time Radio.
Yeah. So they brought me or they asked me if I would come in and do a talk on influencer marketing and just how to do that. And that if I had a startup company for all these different product types, how would I go about marketing it? And I've been so sick of traveling. I've like been all over the place recently and I just want to knock out a whole bunch of projects. So I was just like, this came through my agency. So shout out to the Abrams Artist Agency. A little alliteration for you in the morning here.
Double A.
So I'm just like, I don't want to do it.
Triple A. Come on. Dang.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotta get a quadruple A going.
So I didn't want to do it. So I did the old like give them the go away price. And they're like, okay, sounds great. Here's your flight info. I think they had somebody else, and then they probably like canceled last minute, so they had to kind of scramble.
Yeah.
So here I am in sunny Cincinnati at actually a really cool hotel. It's called the 21C Art Museum Hotel. So you walk in, and it's all like – it looks like a very aggressive avant-garde like art gallery in the lobby. And all through the rooms and hallways, it basically feels like you're in a museum. It's pretty cool and not what you would expect.
Yeah, we got a 21C downtown in Oklahoma City. It's really, really cool.
Yeah.
It's like a museum that they're like constantly rotating out.
And it makes so much sense to do these, not in LA as much, but in places like Ohio or Oklahoma where, you know, maybe there isn't the funding for as many, you know, awesome museums as there is in the bigger sort of coastal cities. So kind of cool. So yeah, right after this podcast, I'm going to go give my spiel on how bigger brands should work with influencers.
That's funny.
That's awesome.
Now, like, how prepped are you for it? Or you just feel like, well, you're living the life, so it's pretty natural to talk about?
I mean, these are all the things I constantly think about. And I don't have to do an hour. It's basically, they want me to do like 15 to 20 minutes just about what I think are the big topics, sort of set the table, and then have it be like a casual Q&A from there.
Q&A.
So gotcha. That means I don't need to do much prep. Like, yeah. I'll probably on the drive over there, like write down 3 bullet points just to guide me in case, mm-hmm. you know, I ever feel like I don't know what to say next. I'll just go to the next one. But I mean, if you live it, you know it. And
yeah, in a sense, you've been preparing your whole life.
And again, like we've all sat through bad PowerPoint presentations at Mike. Mike, have you ever been in a situation where you had to listen to a lot of PowerPoint presentations that were terrible?
High school, maybe?
I was about to say, that was all of high school. That was like a peak PowerPoint. That was another triple letter alliteration.
Peak PowerPoint.
Yeah. What about you, Chris? Have you ever had to sit through them in a academic or professional environment?
Not like what you're talking about. I mean, yeah, like the closest thing would be more similar to Mike's experience, I would say. But it's, I could imagine that it would be pretty painful. You'd be like, okay, yeah. Move it along.
They're just so slow and dumb most of the time, and often given by really smart people, but they just don't think about how they're basically unloading their mind into a document without actually thinking of how people would perceive that document when it's played in real time or performed in real time.
Yeah, I love the idea of Q&A in a live session like that, because it basically makes for a custom-made speech that's tailored to whatever the audience is actually thinking about and wondering. Like, that was why I loved the podcast that we did the first time that we ever did like a live podcast, when we did it at WorkbenchCon the first year. And it was purely like, it didn't make sense to do a normal podcast, because it's like, when else are you going to be in front of a bunch of people that have questions and like you can have an actual back and forth with them?
Yeah,
big time.
It's almost like I would rather do the Q&A first to see what people are interested in, and then kind of expand in my presentation around the points they're interested in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And plus, a bad PowerPoint is basically watching somebody else read bullet points from their own PowerPoint.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that moment where they don't look at you anymore. They just decide to turn around and look at the screen behind them. So you're just looking at their back while they're reading their own PowerPoint.
Right. I think
don't do that.
The exceptions are when everything's very information dense and mm-hmm. the PowerPoint is almost like a research manual you're going to hand over to the audience at the end, like
right.
a guide. And your presentation is just to sort of familiarize with it and give it a little bit of context. Because then I think you can pack, you know, a ton of information into like a 1 hour presentation, and the audience knows that they're getting the document afterwards. So there's a lot of sort of follow-up support, but at least they ran through it with the sort of expert once. I also think that that's a really effective way as well. But you let them know in the beginning, hey, we're going to give you this document. So really ask notes or ask questions and take notes that are relative to putting the information into context, but you're going to get this all.
But it's cool because this whole conversation is also going to be like pretty valuable to you too, because you've got people that are, I don't know exactly what their positions are going to be, but they're either in marketing or they're executives for like big consumer brands, and they're basically asking you everything they want to know.
You know, it's funny when
and so you get to.
Yeah. Well, I actually mentioned you in my initial call with them when they're sort of talking about what want to talk about, because they said, how would you market a shampoo if you started a shampoo company? I'm like, well, I'd get my boy Mike.
I know a guy.
He's got great hair.
He's got great hair and could do some funny like shower videos.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, if a few months from now, if you hear a whole bunch of like shampoo and consumer
some
goods
head and shoulders
sponsors on our content, you'll know that this presentation was well received.
Yeah, I'm picturing right. Mike as like the new Old Spice guy.
Nice. And I'm coming out like Terry Crews does.
Yeah,
just like flexing.
I'm gonna have to start
explosions.
Working out a lot more.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Other than that, I finished up building the projector bed since Chris didn't like my idea.
Hey,
yeah.
It wasn't me, it was LG.
Yeah. So ViewSonic, you know, well actually, you know, the projector that I'm working with is more portable. It's like a smaller kind of 4K one. And it's funny, they didn't want to do it either at first, but I just told them I wouldn't do it. I'm like, this is a good idea. People will like this. This is very internet-y, you know. So
yeah.
Like,
but it looks really good too. I really like the angled headboard on it and everything. It's a really clean, just like modern take. But I have to imagine, aside from welding up those brackets that you had to make, it was a really simple build, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not dissimilar from the one that you built, the all plywood one, but just relying more on the metal. And yeah, it was fun to getting back into welding. I got a nice big sort of welding zit on my forehead, which is always great.
Zits from welding?
You can. It's just dirty and it's like so hot outside, and you got to remember to clean.
It's like rubbing dirt onto yourself.
Clean that little band part in the front. Mm. But yeah, no, I was really happy with how it came out. There was a little bit of back and forth. I originally went a little bit too clean and modern on the legs for the bed. And then had them all nice and painted, put them on, and it just flexed a little bit too much. So I had to go back in and added an additional sort of support piece of steel. But other than that, it was weird. I was actually testing it out sort of just it's sort of a strange experience lying flat on your back, looking straight up at the ceiling and watching like a YouTube video or a Netflix show. But I'm for it. And screen mirroring now with phones is like fantastic. And yeah, it's kind of a cool thing. Like I actually think it's supposed to be better for you to sleep on your back anyways, but I don't. I kind of wish that I would. I feel like I would have like less back and kind of neck sort of tightness in the morning. But I think this would be a good way to train yourself to develop a better sleeping posture. It's just put the screen that you're watching when you fall asleep.
Doze off watching Netflix on your ceiling.
Yeah. Put the projector on like sleep mode. So it like, you know, will turn off automatically in like 15, 20 minutes. And that way you're sort of already in that position.
Just throw some Chill with Bob Ross on there.
Exactly.
Good to go. Be exactly. out in no time.
What do you guys got going on?
What have you been working on? Chris, let's hear yours.
Yeah, I literally just put up a video like an hour before we started recording the podcast. So I will assume you guys have not seen it yet. But it's on some heavy duty floating wall shelves. I think that's what they're called. Cool. Like floating wall shelves. Is that their official title? I don't know. Whatever. Some big heavy duty shelves for my parents' house. Did like a faux live edge on them. Got, I don't think I talked about this on here, but actually like a big part of the video ended up being, so when we came up with the idea, like I knew like, okay, I'm going to need some heavy duty hardware for this. So I found some on Rockler and the reviews were, I would say mixed to negative. And so I right. wanted to like kind of talk, not dispel that necessarily. Oh, I did talk about this on here. Cause then I made the equating it to, I think that's where I came up with the analogy of it's similar to like Bloom drawer slides where like, you know, Joe Schmo is not going to put these things up. But anyway, the video's out. So if you haven't seen it, go check it out. It's 2 days old now. It could use the views. Maybe. I don't know. I actually don't know how it's did. But other than that, I've still got actually, I've been doing this a lot lately where it seems like I'll like just build and build and build for 3 weeks and not do any editing and then find myself in a position where I have like a ton of editing to do. And it might be more efficient actually to do it this way, but I find it to be not as enjoyable because you just like are really like now that I'm looking down the barrel of like editing 3 videos together, I'm not excited about it. Whereas like when I build No. one and then edit it, build one and edit it, I feel like I'm always like excited to like get it done type of deal.
And you're switching operations
yeah.
enough that like, cause also I have to imagine by the time you get done building that many things, you're kind of ready to like not be in the shop for a day.
Yeah. That is a yeah. nice part of it just to be like, okay, everything's done. And like, I can breathe a little sigh of relief in that. Like I didn't totally mess this up. I always feel like that every time a project's over, but it's just like, I don't know, man, there's something about looking down the barrel of knowing that you're just going to be editing for a long time that is unexciting. Although then it does yeah. get you back. Kind of the opposite end of that coin is by the time you get done with that, you're like super pumped to be like, all right, let's build something.
Yeah. But that's the beauty of what you are saying is like, do one, edit one, build yeah. one, edit one.
That's the fun way to do it.
Everybody gets caught in that loop sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. Mike, what are you doing?
So what's next though? What's the next video? What do you, yeah. What's Oof. First thing okay. you got to edit?
So I have to edit. I built these like fancy little drawer boxes that go in the desk that I made. So I don't know if cool. you remember, it has like the top portion where the monitor sits and essentially has 3 cubbies below it. And so it seemed wasteful not to fill that space in. So I made that.
We brainstormed. I don't mean to cut you off, but we brainstormed and we were talking about what we would put yes, in those cubbies. Right. You remember that episode? Yep. We were talking about little organizers yeah, and stuff.
You came up with your SD card backup system. Yeah.
Can you give anything away?
I can say
what you make your drawers for.
I calculated the volume and I can fit 144,000 SD cards in these boxes. That'll be my entire catalog. Actually, I don't know. But okay. It would definitely be a lot. It probably wouldn't be that many, but SD cards don't take
Wait,
up a whole lot.
Wait, did you say 1,044?
I said 144,000. I think that would be a, okay. That'd be like a good, that'd be a huge S box.
Well,
full,
that's
but
the amount of storage Mike's going to need now that he's not going to erase any of his memory cards.
I know.
Oh, yeah. And I didn't tell you guys. What? I did it. I bought 10 SD cards after we recorded the podcast. Very strong move. They were $10 a piece.
Oh, that's cheap.
You go
$9.99.
You go with the SanDisk.
They were 64 gig. No, I went with that PNY, which is, I'm going to say, a less reputable brand, but I think they're just kind of more of an internet brand. I've always seen them on Amazon for as long as I can remember. I just have never seen them like at a Best Buy or something like that. which I think is to their credit.
Yeah. You know what I found is that, like, so while obviously the storage keeps getting cheaper, as you start recording in higher quality formats, you need faster write speeds. That's where they start getting expensive. Like, once I very, very rarely film in 4K, but I got, I don't know, like 120 megabyte per second write speeds on my card so that I can do it if I need to, type of deal.
Got it. Yeah. I think these are, not to get big into SD cards. Let's do it. Because I know that's what everyone's
here for.
That
was the most popular part of last week's episode from the feedback I've been getting.
Okay, great. Yeah, these are 98 megabyte per second. So they're good. They're like plenty good for HD video. I don't really shoot 4K yet. At some point I will, but my camera doesn't even shoot 4K. So
yeah,
I'm not worrying about it. I'm running with it.
And how much storage is, sorry, not to elongate this.
No, so a 64 gig, okay, which 64 is plenty gig. For
that's
me
not bad.
For one.
Yeah, you can get a
for
whole
one
day
video
of shooting.
Right. For one video, 64 gig is really perfect. I usually fill up about 50.
Yeah.
Between 50 and 60.
Oh, so these will be single. You can have a project per card.
Yeah. And I think those were $10 a piece. 128 gig were about $18 a piece.
Do you ever remember that project that I made for Dwell when we were doing those Dwell videos where, actually, I don't know if I put it in there in the video, but I made drawings of like all of my furniture and made like a little display wall.
Yeah.
It's like an art display wall.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I like that one a lot.
You could do like that exact idea, but then make yourself a little template that cuts out the shape of an SD card that could sit in like the wooden rail that's below it, and then pop the SD card for that video into each one. So you'd have like a picture of whatever that video was, and then there's the SD card for it. That could be your organization system.
And here's all the raw footage.
Yep.
Exactly. But anyways, the whole reason I did this, and the people that listened to the last episode know, it's just like one more layer of backup. I figure, hey, if this is my business, I don't know what that content is valued, but it's got to be at least worth $10 in the situation where every other backup dies and I ended up spending, you know, $100 on SD cards over the last 6 months.
Right.
I can handle that.
Yeah. I'd say a week's worth of work is worth $10.
Exactly. But anything else to report on?
Yeah, that's it.
That's about it?
Oh.
Well, actually, we'll go for it.
I started getting photos back from the photo shoot that I did with Caleb Cole for the Container House.
Oh, yeah. You've been sharing some of those.
Yeah. So I just shared the first one. And I wasn't sure, right? Because I've been putting off sort of renting the house because I feel like I just haven't captured enough content from the finished product. And something just kind of worries that, you know, as soon as you get sort of people in there Airbnb-ing it, you know, things are going to get broken and kind of messed up and stuff like that. So,
okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
So I found, like, every once in a while I'll realize that I'm just procrastinating because I haven't solved something, but I haven't even like identified what I haven't solved yet. And so I found myself doing that and I was like, you know what? I'm not visualizing how I want to take all the photos and that makes me putting it off. I'm just going to go and hire someone that I know that's really, really good at it. And that'll just, you know, book him, pick a time. So it locks me in. I'll have to stage to the best of my ability. It won't be perfect because I'll always want to do more, but at least that'll get it done. So I hired Caleb. He came out for 2 days and just an awesome dude. And I think we're actually going to, he's really interested in actually getting into what we're doing. And we're going to do some exchanges where he helps me out with photography stuff. And I help him out with sort of design and construction stuff. He actually has a lot of family in the Oklahoma area, and they were actually thinking of flipping some houses in Tulsa. Mike, their in-laws are there and own construction companies, so might have to connect you guys if you're doing some of that kind of stuff ever. But yeah. He came out.
Tulsa's such a cheap market, too.
Yeah. So he brought out like this like super wide angle lens, which is, you know, one that I don't have that was fantastic for kind of photographing these, you know, really narrow container spaces. And I just got the photos back and it's fantastic. Like, you know, we shot for 2 days. So, you know, he gave me all of the raw footage for all the files, which is like over 1,000 photos, which are all pretty good out of the box. But, you know, he's, it's a lot of time to, you know, he was saying that you're actually paying as much for the photo editing as you are for actually showing up and taking them.
Right.
So he edited about 40 for me that are just fantastic. And, you know, wasn't cheap, but from my standpoint, it's like, if I get four or five really banger thumbnails out of those, which is which is, you know, pretty essential for the Modern Home Project series.
Yeah.
People want to see a shipping container. If they're going to click on a shipping container house video, they want to see a shipping container on the outside. So it'll be really interesting when I do the one on like interior design, that episode, because I'll have to show some of the insides and like the kitchen and stuff. So I'll try to figure out a way to kind of indicate that this is a kitchen inside a container. But no, they just look so crisp. And the reason I sort of picked him is that there's a lot of photographers that I like, but I was looking at this guy, Max Thrive, who's really popular on Instagram. And his photos are amazing, but they kind of almost look like fantasy art. They're so over the top. And I think there's this thing that dudes tend to do, where they really go for like the high contrast, high saturation. Like they go for a lot of like drama in the structure of the photo. And what I like that sort of Caleb was really good at is his photos look like natural, but better. They look really kind of like crisp, and the colors look real, but they're sharp and clean. And there's kind of a light, airy kind of California vibe to it.
Yeah. And you said you got 40?
I got 40 ones that he edited that are just like,
yeah, that's great.
Better than anything I've ever, they're magazine quality. I mean, they're like the type of thing when we would submit stuff to publications like Dwell and stuff like that from the architecture side to publish, they're that level of quality. So having, you know, for me, I basically broke it down that, you know, a really great Instagram post is worth like $50 to $100 to me, and a really good thumbnail is worth a couple hundred dollars for me. So I kind of did the math that way, and it sort of made sense to, you know, it was kind of a home run deal for me in terms of the amount of content I get. And also I didn't have to edit any of them, which is fantastic.
That is nice. Right.
No, I just like it from, I mean, obviously you've got to populate an Airbnb listing and all the thumbnails, but even just from what you're talking about, an Instagram perspective, like what's a good Instagram post worth? And it's going to be interesting to see, because obviously you're not just going to dump 40 photos, like here it is, Instagram, here's like a bunch of carousel posts. Now that's all out of the way. I'm assuming you're going to kind of spread that out and post things when it's relevant and all that kind of stuff. So I'm going to be excited to see what production value brings on Instagram posts like that. You know, it'll be interesting to see if those really do well on something like the Explore page, because I'm sure the people that follow you and they know about the container house already, you know, they don't care as much about, you know, how high quality the image is.
Right.
But the people that aren't already familiar with you, I'm curious what that'll do. Like if that'll bring in a bunch of fresh eyes.
Yeah, I think you're bringing up a really good point. Like I don't think it's something where I want to flood my next 40 posts all be these super professional shots, because it'll change expectations and it won't look as much like my voice. It's still my design work. So I think that'll be sort of the challenge is pacing these in between sort of project videos and stuff like that going out on Instagram. So it's not suddenly changing the palette, you know, too dramatically, and then it turns off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You never want to flood people with that kind of content, but what you do want to do is flood people with a good old fashioned ad read. This episode is brought to you by the investing app, My Wall Street.
Let's be real, investing can be intimidating. There's thousands of stocks to choose from, and it's hard to know if the portfolio you're building or the stocks that you're investing in are going to make any sort of return. Maybe you've even thought about investing, but just had no idea what stocks to invest in or where to start. That's where My Wall Street comes in. My Wall Street offers a short list of stocks that their experienced investors have spent countless hours researching. And here's the big part, they're not a broker, which means they're giving you this information, but they're not profiting off of your investments. And that just makes me feel like that I can trust them more. They offer guidance in a simplified investing journey, basically acting as an investing companion, guiding you on building a diversified and long-term portfolio. They're there for every step, teaching you the basics about investing, the things you need to know before you start, to setting up a broker and starting and managing your own portfolio. With the app, you can invest and learn on the go, and they show you how to invest what you can when you can.
So right now, our listeners can access the entire My Wall Street app for free and use it for 30 days instead of the normal 7 days. Just visit mywallstreet.com/modernmaker to download their app now and get access to their market-beating stock picks and expert guidance. After your trial, you can continue your investing journey with them for just $9.99 a month. Again, that's My Wall Street, spelled My Wall, ST, MYWALLST, /modernmaker. mywallstreet.com/modernmaker. All right, thanks. Thank you, Storyblocks, for supporting this episode of the Modern Maker podcast. Storyblocks Video is a great service for when you're in need of a quick video clip for B-roll, After Effects templates, or motion backgrounds for your videos.
One of the biggest value adds that I see in Storyblocks is their drone footage. We all know a good drone shot can take your video to the next level. It almost brings your production value up to par with movies. But the problem is, drones are expensive, they're not easy to fly, and you're not even allowed to fly them in a lot of places now. Storyblocks has done a great job of curating a collection of really high-quality drone footage and also categorizing them, letting you know where it was shot so you can find the perfect clip for your video.
So by joining Storyblocks, you'll have access to studio quality clips, templates, motion backgrounds, and more at a fraction of the cost. You can download as much as you want from their member library and get exclusive discounts to millions of additional marketplace clips where you'll save 40% off every purchase compared to non-members. New clips are added regularly, so there's always something fresh to download. And everything's royalty-free, so you can use it for commercial and personal projects such as YouTube videos. So head over to storyblocks.com/modernmaker to get started today. Again, that's storyblocks.com/modernmaker, or just click the link in the description. All right, thanks, Storyblocks. All right, we're back, and I got a burning question for Mike. Whatever happened to those AirPods we talked about a couple weeks back?
Yeah.
Okay, so a couple weeks back, I mentioned I love AirPods a lot. I always build in AirPods. It's a really convenient thing.
AirPod
but
enthusiast.
They're probably not. I'm an AirPod enthusiast, yeah.
He's an ape.
There's no way to say that without sounding like a complete tool, but you know what? I'm just going to say
it. Sounds like a tool the way you said it, too, so. You're all good.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, the bad thing about AirPods is they're probably not that great to use as hearing protection, so I was trying to find a workaround. I went on Amazon and I ordered some of those. They're just like little silicone sleeves for AirPods. I think people really use them whenever they're working out. I think they just keep them in your ear a little bit better. And I thought maybe this would help. And they did help marginally.
So it just makes
but
them thicker?
But that definitely
so that
was
it,
not
it
the solution
tighter?
I was looking for. It's basically literally, you remember back in the day whenever they were first coming out with cell phone covers and they would have those really floppy silicone ones?
Yeah.
It's basically made out of that same material.
Gotcha.
And so that wasn't the solution, but you know, we were one step closer. But what I found is you can get these, basically it's like an epoxy, the same way you have a part A and a part B. You mix the two together, it creates a putty, and then you stick it in your ears. Now, this stuff is made to be custom molded earplugs, not to be involved with AirPods at all. So what you do is you basically mix the A and B together, you put it in your ears, and you kind of let it set for 20 minutes until it hardens, and then now you have custom molded earplugs. And they've got a little bit of give to them because they're kind of a silicone type material as well. But what I did, instead of just throwing them in there, is I packed my ears full of this epoxy stuff, but then I threw my AirPods in. And so that they molded around
Please
my ears and the AirPods at
this.
The same time.
Uh-huh.
And because, oh, I am. I've finished prototyping. Now I need to actually film it and do it all one more time. But this material has enough give that the AirPods can come in and out of the mold without me modifying it all. Like, I didn't have to cut anything. It worked perfectly. The one thing that I had to do was I didn't put the AirPods in 100% of the way into my ears, probably about 75%, just because I wanted to make sure that there was plenty of material around the AirPod. And so what I did do is I had to get a little drill bit and basically drill a channel from the speaker of the AirPod and then basically direct that down my ear canal so the sound comes through.
Sound holes.
But it works perfect, man. Like, it blocks out
How
sound really well.
Wow.
The AirPod still functions perfectly. The only thing you have to do is go into your settings and make it to where typically when you use AirPods, if you take them in and out of your ear, it just auto plays. But unfortunately, with these earplugs
in... It still
in,
thinks it's in something?
It always thinks it's out of something. Oh. It never recognizes that it's in your ear.
It's not seen the change.
I guess it's... I don't know if it's the material or something like that, but there's something about it that it doesn't recognize that it's
like
in your ear ever. And so you just have to turn that off.
Can you still charge them?
Well, you'd have to take it out of
the little
silicone to do it.
Yeah, but they pop out of that little silicone stuff super easy.
That reminds me of one of my favorite college basketball stories. Like, it's before your time, Mike. Wow. But do you remember the basketball player Big Country Bryant Reeves?
Oh, yeah. First pick by the Vancouver Grizzlies.
He was like this just wow. probably like 6'10 to 7 foot, just kind of unathletic, thick-looking white guy. Was he from Oklahoma? Like
probably.
And
feels on the nose.
Surprisingly good, like, shooter and like a good post-up game. Totally unathletic, but he was like this kind of skilled, unathletic big man that in college basketball can actually be really, really good. And
right.
there's this funny story because he had never, you know, he went to a small high school and he never played, you know, he never really been on an airplane before. So in college basketball, that was his first time being on an airplane. And he complained to the stewardess that his ears were really hurting from the pressure and he didn't know what was going on. He was kind of like freaking out. And so the stewardess gave him some gum and said, here, try this. This might help. She came back and he had chewed the gum and stuck it in his ears.
I knew that where that was going as soon as he said she gave him some gum.
So
and it didn't work, huh?
It worked like a charm.
When I thought of you putting stuff in your ears in Oklahoma, that was the story.
Conjured up images of Bryant Reeves.
I might as well be Big Country. I like it.
You're this generation's Big Country, Mike.
But it was encouraging, man. It was really cool that they worked. So it's going to be probably a minute and a half long video. And so
killer.
It's definitely not going to be standard modern builds, but I'll throw that up on YouTube sooner
killer
than
later.
I was
going to
ask,
video.
Is it YouTube or Instagram?
Yeah, you know what? I'll shoot it horizontally, obviously, for YouTube, but I'll throw it on Instagram TV as well because I've never uploaded a video to IGTV.
This feels like a good first one.
Yeah, so I did my first one, and what I noticed is that it's a little bit more evergreen. And I think it's just, you know, Instagram is it shows up in the Explore page for people that like similar things as what I sort of click on for hashtag-wise. So,
Well, that's cool.
It has more of a long tail, but if you did an IGTV video of that, I mean, that's the kind of thing that people, I think, are curious because they probably have AirPods in their ears as they're sort of clicking on it and maybe sort of thinking about how they don't work that well. So if you have like that kind of text overlay on just like an action shot of you like molding the ear, saying like how to customize your AirPods to fit better, I think that's a banger, particularly on Instagram.
I made AirPods better.
Yeah.
And that's a good point. Aside from the people that are wearing AirPods when they look at it, I'm always on Instagram with the sound off. It doesn't matter if I'm scrolling through my feed or watching Instagram stories. My sound is 99% of the time off. So I'll definitely throw in some text and stuff like that. That's a good idea.
Smart man.
Although I've got one more piece of Instagram news for everybody.
Oh,
and then we
it.
Can talk about other things than what we've been working on. My best project to ever do well on Instagram. I didn't say that the right way. We're going to edit.
We all got it.
Yeah, we got it.
Oh, okay. No,
we,
no edit.
We figured it out.
We're rolling with that? All right. Sorry.
This morning.
My best performing project on Instagram ever was the DIY Kintsugi concrete table.
Yeah. Ooh.
I posted two photos back to back of it, and the first one was my best performing picture ever, and then I followed it up with its successor, my new best performing picture ever.
Oh, man.
Boom. Yeah, and then the YouTube video is doing well. The YouTube video is doing well also. So shout out and thank you to everybody that supported and watched all that stuff. That was really cool. It was encouraging.
Yeah, I saw that.
That was a nightmare of a project.
It looks fantastic, and I also think it's because I'm constantly shocked at what the concrete chair that crushed on Instagram and did fine on YouTube. And I'm starting to get a good feel of what that is. But I think the AirPod thing is kind of the case. It's these projects where you could understand them in one thing, but don't have a lot of search, but are like really visually expressive, like golden concrete that just so jumps out at you. Whereas on YouTube, it's more of the YouTube audience, I think, for particularly what we do too, or maybe it's just the way we've sort of curated it, is predominantly male and might see that as sort of an aesthetic or decorative kind of thing and be less likely to click on it. But on Instagram, the commitment's so short and you're going to probably get the punchline that you're seeing right in front of you explained rather than have to watch, a 10-minute project. So,
yeah.
Well, I think the other thing that it has going for it is, so like on YouTube, as much as like the thumbnail and all that stuff are so important, but what's also important is like the quality of the video. All that stuff over time starts to like get factored in the way that YouTube recommends it and how well the video is going to do long run. And I think that even though it sucks while you're building something, it makes for great videos anytime you can like mess up and then redeem yourself within a video. It makes for like a stronger video. There's just like a stronger story there. It's more compelling to like for people to stick with it if they've started watching it. So I think that also factors into the success.
Yeah. And it was a fun edit also, because I had to figure out how I kind of tell the story of I was building something else. Like, this wasn't what I was going for. And so I had to sort of explain what I was doing, but not give too much away, because I'm still attempting to build what I was building.
Right.
And so I don't want to make the next video kind of useless.
Right.
And so there's this kind of like little towing the line I had to do of like giving enough information, but not giving the next thing away. And then also not making it too long-winded when things messed up, because I don't want to like set too long on a negative. I want to make sure that I'm like, all right, that messed up. That sucks. But this is what I'm planning on doing now.
And it's kind of funny too, like watching you like in the moment, like, you know, it's done in a way where at least you get a chuckle out of it.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it was fun, and I'm glad it went. Oh, wow. Holy cow.
Glad it's doing
well. And I'm glad that it went well. There we go.
By the way, we're recording this episode very early in the morning.
We are
earlier than we normally record. So cut Mike some
slack.
But Chris,
we've got some questions from our listeners. Once again, what are they?
We do. We still have some questions that we wanted to keep working our way through. So let's do that right now. First one comes in from Shaverwood. He says, what intimidates you in the makerspace?
John
or
Malecki.
Does anything intimidate you? John, every morning, that guy leaves me a threatening voicemail.
I'm not threatened by him. He actually threatens me every day.
Yes. Shout out to John Malecki. And congrats on the upcoming nuptials. Big man, big man's getting amazing. Married. Actually, also shout out to them. They did a really good episode on the Made for Profit podcast called Work-Life Balance. It's very, very good stuff. What intimidates me? I think 45 degree bevels that have to result in a perfect 90 degree angle.
Mm-hmm. Dude, you nailed that. Dang. So
true. Especially because I don't use a table saw often. So it's so weird that like I've developed this repertoire of like fudging it. So I've been going just more and more all in on just circular saw. Like I hardly ever use it. I mean, I never really used a table saw a lot. And now that we have a couple, you know, we have like the rigid kind of upgraded contractor table saw at the Joshua Tree house. But even then, I just hate bringing it out and setting it up and doing it. I just throw the plywood on the ground and then rip it with my circular saw. So for like the bed, I had to, you know, I wanted it to be at kind of a 30 degree angle. And, you know, I'm not using I'm just clamping down a relative straight edge, just using a trim board for that. So it's not even perfectly straight, but I've gotten really good at just using the orbital sander to kind of blend it right at the seam. Cause it's really the seam cause I had these brackets that are going to hold it structurally. So I don't need the glue seam to be perfect, but I've gotten really good at just making it match at the ends. And then if it's a little bit wonky in the middle, just kind of bending and adding a few sort of screws in hidden locations to kind of hide that. But doing perfect 45 degree angles that have to result in a 90. Ooh, that's rough.
I'll hit you with mine. Cause I agree with you. That is one that is never as easy as I wish it was. One thing that gets me is just hardware and like concealed hinges and any kind of like drawer slide, that sort of thing, because there's always like a very specific amount of tolerance. Like if it's drawer slides,
fuck drawer slides,
it
drawer
needs slides this much between the wall stupid. Of the cabinet and the slide. And that's it. It's not that I'm always messing up, but I'm like, this should be easier. And I should always get this done faster than I do.
Yeah.
And so whenever I'm designing projects, I'm always trying to work around it somehow.
Yeah, it's not that it intimidates me. It's just that it just makes me feel dumb.
Right. That's it though, man.
It just takes way longer than it should.
Yeah.
So what's always, so like for these drawer boxes that I just built for the desk, right? I wasn't going to put hardware in them, but I didn't want to just like make it a box. I wanted to make it a little bit nicer. So I put these like very thin little strips that are like runners that kind of space it away from the side a little bit and it like keeps it even. And it's crazy how good making your own like simple little wooden drawer slides that are basically just like two pieces of wood, one that goes on the box, one that goes on the cabinet, and it sits on top of it. It's crazy how good they work. Like in your head, you picture it's going to be like trying to slide it along there. But like you put a little wax on there, it just like slides right along. Really the only problem with it is just like, you know, coming up with a solution for not pulling the drawer all the way out, that sort of thing.
Right. I think for a project like a side table or something like that, doing your own little drawer slide or little guides, you know, out of wood or whatever is such a great idea. I think when it comes down to doing a big cabinet or like a dresser, if you're working, building kitchen cabinets or something like that, definitely not worth working around. Get some good like Bloom drawer slides. Plus they've got the good soft close and everything. Totally worth it. But I'm exactly where you are too, because I've done little DIY drawer slides a couple of times and they work really, really well.
Yeah.
Like surprisingly well.
Yeah.
And especially if you just paste wax them a little bit.
Yep. Get some of that Johnson's paste wax or Procter & Gamble if they make it. I don't know. But
you know, I would, SC Johnson just might be a P&G company.
There you go.
It's either that or Unilever.
They're probably
huge competitors.
I'll take yours, Mike, and just generalize it even further. And that's just any kind of like instruction that I have to follow pretty much. Whenever I'm building something, if I can come up with my own way to do it, I'm good. If I have to follow instructions, like I'm immediately kind of anxious going into it and a little intimidated, I guess. Ben's point about the 45 degrees. So like, here's something that has helped me that I've gotten no better at doing it, but it's just like a way to kind of hide it. Or I guess two ways that you can hide it. So one is the, like, I think it's called burnishing technique, which is basically you just get like something that's cylindrical and like the edge of a screwdriver, like a smooth screwdriver. And you basically just like put pressure on it and rub it and it'll kind of like close the fibers up around the edge. So it doesn't actually make the seam any tighter, but it kind of hides the gap. You can do it with plywood too. I've never tried it with plywood, but I think Michael Alm, when we were building those things, I think he did it on plywood and it worked. I've only done it with hardwood. Definitely works with hardwood. And the other thing that really helped me a lot was I found a lot of times when I was making a box, like it's easy to get three corners nice, but it's always hard to get that last one perfect.
Right.
And so when you're gluing it up, if you can like have the foresight to know which corner is going to be the bottom, and then you can kind of fudge that one where like any visible gap is on the underside rather than the side, you could totally have a gap and just like not even notice it pretty much. So that's secret. Don't get any better. Just hide all your mistakes.
That's exactly it. Okay. But we have to rewind to the burnishing.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
I think so.
I understand the process of what you're doing.
Yeah.
But what does it achieve? Like, how does that make your joint better?
So it doesn't make the joint any better, but like if there was a visible gap, so say like, because usually if you cut your bevels and they're slightly off, they're still going to touch somewhere, but they might not like touch up on the outside of the bevel. They might only touch on the inside. So all the structures on that like inside edge of the bevels where they meet, but to close the gap up, it just basically like bends the, so you're going to end up with like a slight radius on it. It's not going to be like a sharp corner, but it kind of just like bends and like breaks and closes the fibers together of the two pieces.
I think I get a little bit better now.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. I'll give that a shot next time that I do something like that.
Yeah. Just next time you're like doing it, just like get like a little scrap piece and like, don't even clamp it. Just make like a really crappy miter and then just try it and see what it does.
Awesome. What do we got next?
Next up. Let's see. Hang on. All right. Ooh, same author. With two questions. I don't know. You call it an author if it's a question. Ask her.
Yeah, why not?
We'll have to send them a sticker.
I know. Rather work alone or on a team?
Alone.
Yeah, if I had to pick one, I'll go alone. But I've always said my ideal situation is working alone alongside somebody else who's working alone.
Right, yeah.
So you can bug them if you need to, but you don't have to like wait for, you know, making decisions by community or whatever. What do you call that?
It's really nice when
committee.
Right. It's really nice when there's an extra set of hands for that one task that saves you 30 minutes of setup as a way to kind of get around it. But yeah, I find that two people working independently parallel sort of alongside each other, I think is for me pretty ideal.
Yep.
Agreed.
Sorry, I had to burp. I was getting away from
Yeah, we heard that. We're keeping that one in.
Keep it in. Disgusting. Richard, that's the editor.
No, we're not. Get it out of here.
No, leave it.
No.
Okay, let's see. Ooh, here. Okay, this one is not maker related. Comes in from Green Lightning 57. Says, if you could have any sandwich right now, what would it be? And I just made room for a sandwich with that burp, so I'm ready to go.
Nothing, man. This is too early.
I don't eat
early
sandwich.
In the morning like this.
Get yourself a croissant.
I don't eat early in the morning like this. Best McGriddles. Sandwich ever, though? Oof. Okay.
All right, I got one.
What do you call a...
What do you call
All
what?
Right, go for it.
Okay. The best sandwich I've ever had. I mean, I think a hamburger is a sandwich, but I think it's too specific. So
we'll take it off the list. Right.
And don't even get me started on saying hot dogs are sandwiches. You're crazy. The best sandwich I ever had was a meatloaf sandwich from a place called the High Times Deli in San Luis Obispo, California. So if you ever find yourself driving up and down the coast on the 101, like I'm not actually...
You need a light snack.
I don't. That's not light. I don't think sandwiches are like that great. I think like sandwiches are more convenient than they are delicious. But this deli just makes over the top massive sandwiches with tons of different sauces, but not too sloppy. And they're just wild and they're really, really good. But it's called the Heisenberg, named after Walter White's
Breaking Bad
character. And it's crazy. It's so good.
I've had a meatloaf sandwich before, and I can confirm they are delicious.
Yeah, I think...
Mike, what's your number one sandwich? You're about to get into it.
I forget.
What do you call it? And it seemed like you were going to describe what the sandwich was.
Roast beef sandwiches, man. The kind that you dip into the...
Oh, a French dip?
Yeah, a French dip. Thank you. You dip it in au jus sauce.
Yeah.
That's the best sandwich, I think. It's so good.
That is up there.
And it's one of those things where, I mean, if you're slicing up roast beef at home... You're an enthusiast, but if you're not that person, it's like a roast beef sandwich, it's like a meatloaf sandwich in that you don't really have one very often, but when you do, you really get to savor it.
And it's a good thing to order at a bad restaurant, because it's like, even at a bad restaurant, it still comes out pretty decent.
Right.
I would never order it at a high-end restaurant, because there's probably something that they're actually really good at, but at like a medium to low-end restaurant, it's a real solid choice.
Perfect. What about you, Chris?
I mean, I guess I got to go, if I'm just going top sandwich, I got to go with the most sensuous of the salted cured meats, pastrami.
Yeah.
All right.
It's hard to
beat
pastrami.
Have you ever just like heated up pastrami in a frying pan and then melted the cheese and then put it on the bread for a hot pastrami?
I've heated up pastrami. Yeah, oh, yeah. All pastrami's hot, isn't it? I think I've only eaten hot pastrami. Yes. That's a good name for me to be a dancer, by the way. If Mike or Ben was powdered gold, I'm going to be hot pastrami.
That's pretty good.
We just need a name for Mike. We'll come up with one next week.
Big country.
Roast beef. No.
Big country.
Open face roast beef. Oh, he's just big country?
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Okay. Let's see. Another question. Should we get into a... I feel like we may have already talked about this. From 715 Woodworks, he says, do you guys ever just not feel motivated to be out in the shop? How do you get back?
It's usually sponsored deadlines whenever I feel that way. No, I mean,
that's how you do it.
That's a joke. But I mean, you know, back home here in Oklahoma, it's warm. Because we've had a few 100-degree days this year already. And I definitely don't want to be out sweating my balls off in the middle of August. But, you know, when there's sponsors and when there's obligations that I've agreed to, you know, you just got to put up with it. But I guess that's the real question, Chris, right? Because like you're in a shop that's beautiful, set up well, and comfortable. You know, easy enough to say you've got a very comfortable shop.
I sweat, but it's not like what you're dealing with.
So what's the secret? Do you have like a TV on the wall to where, you know, you can just have like UFC fights going on or like YouTube videos playing while you build? Like what's the secret?
I don't.
It's kind of like a gym, I have to imagine.
So we got the heavy bag in the corner that gets me in. No, I would say honestly is... When I don't feel motivated, I just treat it like work. I've talked about this on the podcast before.
As soon as you
start treating it like work, you'd be surprised how like the feeling motivated or not feeling motivated, like whatever that feeling is, only is going to last like 10 or 15 minutes of you actually working anyway. You're going to end up at that same point. So like just say, I'm not motivated, whatever. I'm just going to get up and go do it. And like you'll be at the exact same spot that you were going to be at no matter how like, I don't know, pumped up on coffee or whatever you were before, either situation, yeah, you're going to be at the same spot come 9:15.
Man, I like that. That's a really matter of fact answer from Chris, because usually you're not as that way. Hey, usually,
I thought about this one.
Yeah, but you're just like, suck it up and deal with it. I like it. That's like some bad advice.
That's right. That's what I tell the kids.
That's bad advice.
Get in there and play some Fortnite, kids. I don't care if you don't want to do it.
For me, exactly. The only thing I kind of put off that way is editing.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Like I do the exact same thing with editing.
I have such a backlog of editing. If anything, I'm always trying to get into the shop as sort of a productive procrastination to get away from editing.
Yeah.
So there's a tendency like, I have a good idea. Let me just sort of play around with it while I'm doing it and put off editing. Like getting the Container House photos done was like the last thing I sort of needed to finish out editing that series, which is just a beast. So I've been, haven't put out a video in a really long time on that channel, but now I'm out of excuses. So going to have to buckle down, get a lot of coffee, a lot of snacks, and just plug myself into the desk for about a couple weeks.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? To go back to what I was saying, that might be like a more practical version of advice that's along the same lines, is I think one good thing to do is when, like, so say if you have your shop at your house or whatever, so you can just walk outside and do something, just come up with like one quick thing that you're going to go do. If you're like, I don't really feel like going out to work, just be like, you know, I have to do this one thing. I'll just go do that one thing. And usually like by the time you've done that one thing, you might be in more of a mood to keep working. I know a lot of times what I'll do more to kind of go back to like the intimidation part is like, if I have a particularly tough part of a build that like I'm kind of procrastinating to start or whatever, I'll just choose something simple. And like, that's why I think I clean a lot while I'm in the shop, is because I just feel like keeping my hands busy kind of keeps me working.
Like, yeah, and that gives you an opportunity to think.
Yeah, exactly. You're like almost like, right, even if like you're subconsciously thinking about it, you're just, there's something about like doing something that keeps you working for some reason.
Yeah, it's funny that you said that. I was going to say, once I had a minute to think about it, like my advice would be find a good stopping point. Because like, let's assume you're building something you were working on the night before. Mm-hmm. Don't leave yourself with a crappy task to do first thing next time.
There you go. Start with something fun.
Yeah, and so last night was actually an example. I'm working on this floating console table, and it was basically to the point where I had to stop because I had to pick up a part, a hinge, which was the funny part because we were just complaining about hinges. But I would have normally installed the hinges and then sanded, but I didn't want to have to do that the first thing tomorrow because I was picking up the hinge first thing in the morning. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, all right, even though I don't have everything where I want it to be, I'm sanding everything. That way I don't have to like not want to do that in the morning.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And so now I'm excited to go down to the shop. All I got to do is install a hinge and the cabinet's done. And then I get to go and install the French cleat and everything on the wall. So I don't have that crappy part. I just get to put on the hinge and then throw on some Maker Brand Simple Finish, boom, which is my favorite part of the process.
Best.
Yeah, exactly. So
should eat a French dip while you're installing that French cleat.
Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty much that's my advice. But what are you guys obsessed with this week now that we're rounding the 1 hour mark?
I got one.
Let's hear it, Ben.
So I might have mentioned this before, but it is the Nature is Metal Instagram account.
I do remember that. Yes. That name rings a bell.
It is so gnarly. So it's just little videos, mostly videos, every once in a while photos of just animals doing animal stuff to other animals. And
Like gruesome stuff?
Very gruesome. Like incredibly gruesome. Okay, so
not for the kids?
So it's not just like the, and I'm not like a big horror movie or kind of gore person in general for what I would like to consume content wise. But what I like about it is that, one, I feel like it kind of refreshes you as like what your expectations of the world should be. That just, you know, remorseless, relentless, and evolutionary, where things are just trying to survive and attack without really thinking about other things, sort of feelings, and just literally things with faces eating other things with their face. Like,
yeah,
even like there's even I think like a video of like a chipmunk, a very Gary looking chipmunk, and it was eating a snake. It killed
I saw that
his little tiny hands. He was holding this little tiny snake by the neck and just eating him face first while the snake was alive. And we loved it.
And this is an Instagram account.
Yeah. And
okay,
Because if the little Gary was eating like a piece of asparagus, the exact same way, it would be the cutest thing in the world. But he's just like destroying this snake as it's wiggling. Right.
So the reason why I like this, and I actually find this like a productive part, even though it's horrifying, and it just makes me so appreciative of all the points in civilization that we've come to. You know, there's times, especially when you're traveling, where you feel like you're being herded like a bunch of animals in like an airplane or stuff like that. On my flight here to Cincinnati, I was like delayed for 4 hours and people were just getting really annoyed at the kind of, you know, at the terminal.
Yeah.
And
but at least there's not a captive bolt pistol waiting for you at the end.
Exactly. Or at least we just don't immediately turn and just start beating the shit out of the airline employees. Like, you know, for as much discord and sort of strife and angst and yelling at each other, like society is still relatively civil and shows a remarkable degree of evolution beyond our sort of animal friends.
Yeah, shout out to communication.
Yeah. Fire.
Big ups, communication.
Wheels and fire.
Yeah, thank you to language. Yeah, and yeah, that too. What about you, Chris?
Ooh, I will keep it on the sandwich theme, or I guess the food theme that got cool. the stomach rolling. BuzzFeed. I know that they're very popular videos, but I've been watching these ones, and for some reason I keep watching.
BuzzFeed, Chris?
I'm not hooked on BuzzFeed, but there's this one series that I just get a kick out of for whatever reason, where it's one of the guys of the Try Guys, Keith, and he eats an entire menu. So like they'll go to Burger King or Arby's or Pizza Hut or whatever and order like literally one of every single item on the menu. And he doesn't eat it all, but he like takes a bite of everything. It's crazy to see like I don't know how much he's acting or how much it's like, no, this is what happens to you. But like he seems drunk by the end of it. Like, you know, going into it, he's like all chipper and whatever. And like by the end, like his speech is slurred and he's talking real slow. And it's pretty crazy.
Because there's a moment when you're like, oh man, this is exciting. I'm going to try every item at Taco Bell. That's great. That's awesome. But then you take one bite of 40 items and all of a sudden you've eaten like two meals.
Oh, yeah.
And you still got to keep going.
And you're like, oh man, more grease and beef and cheese.
I was about to say, he starts getting sweaty. Like, he starts getting the beef sweats halfway through everything.
Just imagine how nasty you feel towards the end of those. But
I was about to say, I was giving you hate, but
they're a good watch.
They're funny. Yeah, exactly.
They're funny. Exactly.
They're a good one.
It's a guilty pleasure. Mike?
Yeah. So mine, I'm actually just going to shout out that new Tarantino movie.
Oh, you saw it
too? Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
All right, next week I'm doing it. I'm going to go see it this week and shout it out.
Yeah. Oh, did Ben already shout it out or something?
Well, he had mentioned it last week.
Ah, man, I apologize. Well, no, I caught up on it, and it was a good show. It meandered for a bit. I think it could have been 25 minutes shorter than it was and been a little more snappy, but who am I to critique Quentin Tarantino, right?
He should watch some of your videos and take a point or two.
Yeah, exactly. Check the pacing
minutes.
On some. Yeah, check the pacing on some Modern Builds videos, and then get back.
Yeah,
to me.
Take a look, bro. You might learn a few things.
That's exactly the phrase. That is the exact phrase that is pretty much the worst ever. But yeah, it was a good show, and I think everybody, you know, did a good job playing it. It was fun, and I just love the. I love the way, you know, it's the same thing with Inglourious Bastards and whatnot, where like Tarantino did a good job of playing with like the audience expectation of like thinking that you're getting dropped into a story that you know the end to, but then completely rewriting it, even though that's not how history went, which is awesome. You know, it's a, I don't know. It's just a good creative move. So no spoilers, but that's how much I'll give you.
Yes, I gotta see
kind of a spoiler.
Yeah, that's a,
no, it's not. It's not what you're thinking.
No.
That's the spoiler.
It was.
I might have. No.
What do you think of like the look and feel and music of it? Because you're not familiar with that time period. Like me and Chris probably are through our parents more.
I was about to say I'm much more familiar with the 80s,
right?
Because that's sort of the generation that my parents kind of stayed in. You know, that was what their youth was, and so that's kind of what I was exposed to was like Aerosmith, Guns N' Roses, and AC/DC.
Classics.
You know?
Yeah.
A lot less the, you know, I don't even know the music that they were playing for the most part, you know? But it was a lot of easy breezy California 70s music. But no, I think the aesthetic overall, I think it was cool, you know? I'm sure there's a version of the 70s I would like more, though. I think that's how I would describe it.
I don't know what that version is, but maybe you should watch that 70s show. There you go.
There we go.
That's
his favorite. Exactly. No. the cul-de-sac version of the 70s.
Hey, that's what you're looking for.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate everybody for listening. This has been another Modern Maker podcast. If you don't follow us on Instagram, me, Mike Montgomery, is at Modern Builds. Chris Salamone, who's the one in the middle of our Google Hangout, is at 4Eyes Furniture. Oh, yeah, that's true. And Ben Ueda from Homemade Modern. He is at Benjamin Ueda. Sorry, I stumbled on that. But we appreciate you guys listening. And if you've got any questions or topics that you'd like us to talk about, keep feeding us, because it's becoming kind of a fun part of the show for us, because we kind of get to rapid fire.
Yeah.
And it's like what we were talking about earlier with the idea of PowerPoint versus a Q&A. It's kind of like custom tailored in a way. Yeah. We get to answer the things you're curious about. And it also lets us go down a rabbit hole that maybe we wouldn't have if you didn't prompt us to. So keep them coming. Just shoot us DMs on Instagram or email us at modernmakerpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
We appreciate you listening every week, and we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
See ya.
Bye.
And a little tidbit of information for the diehards who are still listening. The challenge is coming up very soon, so stay tuned.
Dun dun.